If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this exciting episode.
Oh, yeah.
Of Mind Pump. In the beginning, we talk, we do a little bullshitting like we normally do. We talk about a company called Socius that we actually, on air, discovered that we really liked.
Yeah.
We talk about a post that I did on Instagram about post-workout nutrition. You're not going to want to miss that. Actually, blowing some minds over here.
Throwing some knowledge
about how you may want to not engage in the post-workout nutrition.
Now, those of you that dig the science and don't like the bullshit and skip to all the questions, this is one you're going to want to listen to. All
you science heads, here you go.
Definitely. And then Adam, I feel like I need to mention this. Adam talks about a protein powder company that he likes to use, Organifi. I actually don't mind their products as well. It's one of the only protein powders I can tolerate. And we have a discount code for you if you do want to get it. Just type in Mind Pump when you order Organifi protein, and you will get a discount.
Doug, is that Organifi.com? Organifi.com.
Excellent. Then we get into the questions. The first question was what we think about anti-glycolytic training. Does it sound complicated? It should. They designed it that way. Then we talk about T-Nation writing an article on building workouts based on your neurological profile. We actually like T-Nation quite a bit, even though we think they copy us sometimes.
Maybe.
We have big egos. Then we talk about physical body adaptations you'll probably get from training with a steel mace and club.
My favorite.
Not a steel mace in the club. They're actually called clubs themselves.
Always the dad jokes.
Finally, how does your sleep posture affect your imbalances and mobility? How big of an impact does it have? And what can you do in your sleep to maximize your total wellness, muscle building, and fat loss? Finally, this month, we are running one of my favorite promotions. We're giving private forum access away for free.
For any of the MAPS programs.
Any program you enroll in, you'll get access to our private forum absolutely free. Now, on our forum, we have competitors on there, stage competitors, bodybuilders, physique
doctors,
competitors.
PTs, nurses. You got it all on there.
And me, Adam, and Justin are on there every single day answering questions, assessing people's form. If you have questions on your MAPS training or other types of training, we have CrossFitters on there.
Plus, September 1st, this is going up. Yeah. So not only are you getting hooked up if you get any of the MAPS programs for free, and it's an amazing community that we've built in there, on top of that, the price is going up in September.
So yeah, so this is a good time. Good time to enroll. Free forum access, enroll in any MAPS program. The place to do it is mindpumpmedia.com.
Have an edible or have a state change to have us calm our nerves down. And then I started to notice I was stupid and I was missing a lot of words, right? Like more than normal.
You're stupid.
So then I couldn't have anything. So then we went, like, we did hundreds of episodes since then. Now I think I'm so comfortable doing this, and we've been doing this for so long that being medicated a little bit actually kind of
lightens. Does it help you?
It does. It lightens it up a little bit. It lightens up a little bit.
Brings us to fun town.
But I am liable to do at least one rambling session because I catch myself doing it.
Really?
Because I get all and I caught the other day. It was so funny. I meant to tell you this. I was getting all passionate about something we were talking about. I don't remember what it was, but it was because I was medicated. And I looked over you, and I had sucked you into the story so much, and I was circling the wagon. I was done, and I was like, look, I'm like talking, like looking at you, Sal, come in here, get me out of here,
take me out of this this drain.
But I also know that I was speaking so passionately that I had pulled you in. You were like this, like listening, hanging on every word.
I wonder when he's gonna stop.
I'm like, no, dude, get me out of here.
Either that, or I was thinking to myself, like, let's see how long this goes.
just make him sweat.
Which that's the other thing I think you're doing. So you're like, I'm gonna let him go because real soon here he's gonna make up a word.
This will be awesome. See what happens.
30 more seconds and he makes up a word, I guarantee it.
No, I get
see over under on it.
I'm usually don't do anything before we record, because when I do, I'll get really fucking passionate about shit and sometimes get too passionate. What I mean is
that's what I mean
I'll have an idea about something, like a concept, that I should exercise restraint when I talk about. But instead, I'm like, for like, sure,
this is the way. This is it.
Yeah, oh, I just had a crazy realization.
Yeah.
And then I listen to the episode, and I'm like,
wait a minute.
That's not true for everybody.
So did anybody look at, did you look into these hats that were sent to us?
No.
So on the bottom, it says wear it forward.
Wear it forward.
Yeah, I don't know if that is that like a pay it forward type of business. I feel like,
or are they just saying like stop wearing your hat backwards like an asshole?
No, I don't think it's that.
Yeah,
I think that.
No, I know it is.
Who started that trend? The hat backwards trend.
I don't know.
Oh my god, the first hat.
Fred Durst is. He rocked it for a long time.
Yeah, what was that? Why?
Before Fred Durst,
I don't know. That was just how he did it.
Backwards hats. God, who did popularize backwards hats?
I feel like it was
it hip hop or was it skaters?
I think it was skaters.
Someone's like, "Hey, my neck."
Hip hop wasn't as popular when skating was coming in.
Nobody really wears a hat backwards anymore, do they?
I do every once in a while.
I do all the time.
Yeah. Justin does too.
Yeah,
I do too.
It depends on the type of hat,
right? I've been wearing this one all morning backwards.
Yeah. You have?
Yes.
I just don't notice.
I know you don't.
I just don't. I wish I looked good in a hat. I don't. It just doesn't work with me.
Well, it's probably
you look like a kid.
It's not your thing.
I look like a kid.
You got to find certain
You're too narrow.
I can only wear I can only wear certain styles because certain styles I look like a bit like you. It looks like a big clown hat on me.
Do it.
Really? You got to find like fitted small.
Does it look like a clown hat on me when I wear a hat? Kinda. Have you guys even seen me in a hat?
Yeah, we have.
We've seen it.
It's funny.
It happened.
All right.
Justin described it before where you have this like oh shit, they posted me.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. Adam got randomly posted in a cloud of smoke.
Wow. Yeah, they're working with Justin Wren.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, with the water project.
Oh, awesome. I didn't know that. Now I feel bad for that.
Give him a shout out.
Well, I tagged him after.
Socius, give him a shout out.
Yeah. So can we read about him before so we know what we're shouting out here? Is it?
Oh, you know why? Here it is. Wear it forward. Every item purchased helps provide one person in need with clean drinking water. If they're working with Ren, then they're awesome.
We already like you.
Because that dude is... I've never met a person that just...
Genuinely passionate.
Like a gentle soul.
Since we're doing it now, we're officially shouting them out. I felt bad because we get boxes of stuff all the time, and 99% of the time we don't even wear it or check it out or do anything.
Yeah,
and
I get rid of shirts.
I spilt my cup of coffee. I spilt my Chimera on me the other morning, and I was like, "Fuck!" It was a white shirt, and I was looking through the boxes of stuff, and I was like, "Oh, I found this," and I pulled it out. And I'm like, "Okay, this is cool." You know, I don't even know what it's for. I put it on, and I'm like, "Oh, this is a comfortable shirt."
I didn't know what that word meant.
Yeah, I didn't even know what Socius was. And I was like, oh, this is cool. So my bad for not shouting you guys out and tagging you. I was not attached to you guys on Instagram. I am now. Love the idea. Love Justin Wren. So here's your official shout out for the business. It's Socius, Socius. And for every piece of clothing.
There it is.
Right? There it is. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. For every piece of clothing item that you purchase, whether it be a shirt or a hat, that provides one person a lifetime of clean water. Mm-hmm. That's fucking cool, man.
I like it.
I'll buy anything of theirs if they're working with him. That's
right.
The thing.
Yeah, yeah. No. I. We all have so much respect for Justin. So the fact that you're tied with that guy doing good things, we love it. We'll support your guys' cause. By the way, those that are listening to, we don't get anything paid or any of that shit for this. This is just literally, this is how I found this out was.
Yeah.
I spilled coffee on my shirt and needed a shirt. I was scrambling around the studio, found a box that had been shipped to us, and this is it. Funny how things like that happen.
Yeah, I don't mind shouting them out at all.
Right.
Yeah. So, you guys saw my Insta story yesterday. I did not realize it would create. I kind of did.
I'm so glad you dropped that. What you want, bro? You got to see. Here's something I got. Here's your Instagram tip from me. Too much knowledge too fast. Too much, bro.
Came in too hot.
Back to back posts that are like paradigm shattering things for people. That's too much.
I got to spread them out.
You got to spread that out. You got a week for people to digest that first one, debate it, research themselves, get mad about it, tag their favorite fitness professional that's been touting that bullshit for years. You got to give them that time. You can't go boom, paradigm shattering. Next day, whack, again, another one. You can't do that.
You know what? You're karate chopping everybody too hard.
You know what it is, dude? It's you're literally peering into my mind. Imagine being me, where I go through these spurts of like, mania where I'm like, and then sprinting through knowledge, and then nothing for a while. It's like, it's so annoying to people around me. I know it is. My poor girlfriend, where I'm just like,
okay, calm down.
Yeah, my hair would be so.
And then for a week, she's like, why aren't you, there's nothing. Your brain is not working anymore. I'm like, I have no idea.
So that being said, the business side of you learns to be strategic about that because you know those patterns about yourself. And you're like, oh my God, I am just full of all this knowledge right now.
Get a backload it. Yeah,
let me write about this, but I'm not going to share it till next week.
I can't do that.
Bro, now while it's hot.
It's like when
while the griddle's hot.
It's like when I buy a present for someone because their birthday is going to be next week. Mm. You're going to get the gift today.
Well, so can
there's no way I'm going to hold that.
So can we agree right now? We're only talking about one of those two because both of those, in my opinion, are big.
Okay.
Both the food, both the anabolic window and the hip thrust thing, in my opinion, are huge things to talk about. And we're not talking about both. Well, you only get one.
All right. I want to talk about the post-workout thing.
That's a good one.
So that it's a huge one. It's a massive, massive
this
one.
This was very, this shattered. This was when we were interviewing the boys just on Thrive.
Yeah.
Right?
So we talked.
Before them, Iron Radio.
Well, first it started with Dr. Ruscio.
Right.
Dr. Ruscio is a gut health specialist who we respect tremendously. He's our resource when it comes to that. And me and him were having a conversation a while ago about things that can poorly affect gut health or things that can cause problems with you. And one of the things he mentioned to me was how, first off, intense exercise, the overapplication of intensity, was very strongly connected in countless studies to poor gut health. And this is actually established. There's no debate with this whatsoever. I've known about this for a while, that one of the negative side effects of overtraining or doing too much is that you end up developing or have higher risks of developing gut problems, including food intolerances. And a lot of this has to do with the inflammatory things that you produce. We're now showing that your microbiome in your gut is affected negatively while you're in this state of overtraining, and gut permeability changes and all that stuff. So that's one thing that I already knew about, but he kind of hammered home. But then we talked about something that was really mind-blowing. He said, you know, the worst time that you can eat if you have gut problems or you have sensitive gut issues is right after you work out. And he explained why. And
which, when he explained this, it was like so duh, right? It made so much sense that I was like, how have I not put this together before? And it's because, like everybody else, I've been brainwashed for so many years. Even though we've dispelled the whole anabolic window on the show already, that it's the benefits that you're getting is so minute that it's not worth focusing on. So we've already kind of said that, but it's not just not worth focusing on. It should be avoided potentially for a lot of people.
It should. So the post-workout window, that anabolic window, is actually a myth. It really doesn't exist. You will replenish glycogen faster because you ate. So it really doesn't matter when you eat. Whenever you eat, then you start to replenish glycogen faster. Really the only benefit is if you are going to work out again in a few hours. So you need to have glycogen to be able to perform again. Otherwise, it doesn't really make a difference. However, if you are already in an inflamed state, if you already have a sensitive gut, intense exercise causes changes in gut permeability, meaning there's a cell wall in your gut that allows certain things to go through and it doesn't allow other things to go through. Well, right after exercise, that changes a little bit. So things will go through the gut that aren't supposed to. And what happens is your body starts to identify these things as foreign invaders and starts to develop an immune response to them. And this is what food intolerances are. This is also what food allergies are, but to a much more extreme, on an extreme side. Food intolerances are much less severe. Like, you're not going to eat something and get anaphylactic shock, but you'll notice that this thing that you eat tends to bother your stomach, and the more you eat it, the worse it tends to get. And so that's what a food intolerance is. Well, post-workout is like this recipe for disaster. It's like this perfect storm. So you've already got inflammation in your gut. You've already got some, you know, sensitivity. Now, post-workout, during the workout, blood is taken away from the gut. In extreme cases, by the way, one of the reasons why you feel like you're going to throw up or shit yourself in extreme cases of intense activity or with even being scared is because your gut's getting rid of food.
Right. And most people know this if you've ever trained really, really hard.
You throw up.
Yeah, you do that crazy leg day, how nauseous you get.
Yeah, your body's trying to get rid... It's trying to divert its resources to your extremities because you need to perform. So it's taking away blood from the gut and resources and going into your extremities, but then it rushes back in post-workout.
Explain to people the evolutionary purpose of that. That was something that we talked about with him that I thought was really interesting. That was the duh.
In cases of fight or flight, your body's goal is survival. It doesn't give a shit. It doesn't care about digestion. It wants to survive. And so what it does is it takes resources away from areas that it can sacrifice and places them in areas that it needs. So your gut is no longer, it's not important at that moment. What's important is, you know, your extremities and being able to move and get the fuck away as quickly as possible. This is why you get a spike in cortisol. It's a stress hormone. People also don't realize that cortisol is an energy producing hormone. So if you have low cortisol, you're feeling sluggish and shitty all day long. Or if you don't respond well to cortisol, you're feeling slow and shitty all day long. So during your workout and post-workout, you get this cortisol spike and you get other hormones related to that that actually cause gut inflammation, change your microbiome, and basically make your gut less likely to receive nutrition and digest optimally. So the worst time to eat is right after your workout because you've got this perfect storm if you have gut issues. So gut issue plus post-workout, bad combination. But what makes it even worse is what have we been sold? So besides you need to have something after your workout, what else have we been sold? That you need to have something that's
fast,
quick digestion.
Right, that's the word.
Quick absorption.
Yeah. Right. This is great. Why it was so crazy to me, I don't know how many people I've seen, especially at the Golds that I'm at, where as soon as I get done with my workout, there's, you know, one to two men's physique or bodybuilder guys who bring their shakes to the gym. And as soon as they get done hammering leg day, they're inside there pounding their shake before they even leave the gym.
And here's the word. Now, this is how opposite it all is, because it really all hit me a couple days ago in the sense that, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I learn something, I'll learn it and know it and understand it to a certain degree. But then it takes me a little while to chew on it for it to really impact me and for me to really, really get it. So, first off, we are told that the faster we can digest something post-workout, the better, because we're sold that we need to replenish glycogen as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. All of that is false. And the quicker you digest something, the worse it is in that particular state of being post-workout. So if I'm drinking like my Vitargo shake, which is a super, you know, waxy maize carbohydrates and these pre-digested protein shakes that are bragging by how fast they could get absorbed by the body. That's a whey protein, right? Whey protein's a big selling point. It gets absorbed by the body so quickly. You are literally hammering that cell wall of your gut even more and causing even more problems. So it's like this, it's like we're literally doing the exact opposite of what we should be doing for optimal health. Not only that, but most of your shakes and bars are artificially flavored, which those artificial flavors, those artificial sweeteners, also have a negative impact on your gut. And this is very true. Athletes that train intensely, a disproportionate number of them have gut issues. This has been well known now in the health industry for a long time. The athletes tend to suffer from gut issues more than the average person. Part of it is that this you know, athletes tend to overtrain more, at least definitely more than the average person.
I would love to see a study with, you know, someone also adding their 400 milligram caffeine pre-workout to that mix also, because now you're ramping up the CNS before you get in there, and then you go train like a motherfucker, and then you get done, then you do that.
Well, think about it this way. Adam, you were a pro physique competitor. You were in this world. The harder and longer the workout, the more likely someone is to eat more, right? Mm. After the workout. Like, oh, fuck, I just had, me and, you know, so-and-so just hammered legs for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
we're fucking exhausted. Now
them.
We're going to go eat like 10 pancakes and crush all this food because we need to replenish all this glycogen and protein and whatever because we just had this crazy workout. Or I'm going to have a massive shake with all these carbs post-workout because I just had this. Like, the harder the workout, the more they sell you that you need to have this immediate post-workout, you know, food or shakes.
Right.
It's a recipe for disaster. It's like a perfect storm. And the crazy thing is now we've all been in fitness for a long time, so we all know people who've been in fitness for a long time as well. I'm not even exaggerating. Okay, this is honest to God truth. I cannot think of anyone. I'm sure there is somebody, but I can't think of anybody that I know personally who's been working out consistently for 10 years or more who doesn't have gut issues. Every single person I know has gut issues in some way, shape, or form who's been in fitness as long or even less than I have. It's like, and it's got to be the combination of the fact that we're likely to overtrain, so that's going to cause potential issues anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then now for at least 15 years, we've been really told that right after your workout, you need to eat or take a shake.
Yeah.
I even see people advocating, some people that we even are friends with will advocate quick digesting, eat some slices of white bread post-workout or this pixie stick of sugar or whatever, these gummy bears. Like
chocolate milk.
Holy fuck, man. Yeah. Like, what are we doing to ourselves?
Yeah.
Well, here's I also want to backpedal a tiny bit. So, because we did discuss this. If you have no issues with your gut and you have a moderate training session to lower intensity training session, you are not really at risk here. So,
no, if you have a healthy gut, I don't think you have.
This is not an issue. Might,
yeah, you're probably.
I don't want to scare everybody who's hearing right now, listening right now, going like, "Oh fuck, I can't believe you're eating." And now, like, it's this huge, like, you can't eat out. It's not that you can't. It's learning actually just to be more aware of it. And I know people listening right now have to have put this together before, right? I've had workouts before where I've trained so hard I'm nauseous. Like, I've definitely had those workouts. That is not the workout that I want to go and have something immediately after I lift. And on top of that, it's not the workout I want to definitely have a shake immediately after my workout. So that's the takeaway from this. Now, it's a normal day for you. You touch some weights. You kind of barely even break a sweat. The heart rate never really elevates that high. You're not ever getting nauseous in the workout. And then you go home right from there, and maybe it's 20 minutes later, and you have a nice balanced meal. There's not a problem with that.
Right. I mean, like Adam's saying, I mean, if you have you don't have any gut issues, it's probably okay. I mean, it's not a big deal to eat afterwards. If you have a super, super intense, crazy, crazy workout, you might want to wait a couple hours for things to calm down before you have your food, even if you have a healthy gut, just to prevent any future issues. But if you have gut issues, you should probably wait hour or two post-workout.
The people I think of right now that should be really tuning into this and trying to evaluate themselves is your CrossFitters, your obstacle course racers, your Orange Theory lovers.
Maybe in season or, you know, preseason bodybuilders.
Yeah, yes, yeah, maybe, right? So maybe, and then maybe bodybuilders, right? Some of them that really train intensely at your higher level, right? The average gym goer, probably not so much unless you're a circuit training type of person, if you're following like a CrossFit type of mentality. Your CrossFitters for sure should be thinking about this. Yeah. Like, that's training that high of an intensity. Because we all know what that looks. I mean, most of them collapse after they get. That right. is a good example of somebody who does not want to pound a shake right after their WOD.
And something you want to consider, I don't think anybody will argue that nutrition plays a significant role. One, it's one of the top things that will affect your gains in terms of your performance, your strength, your muscle building, and your fat loss, right? Nutrition is by far one of the most important things at the top of the list. But what we forget is our gut health is connected to that. It's not just what you eat. It's also how your body assimilates and uses it. So you can eat the best diet in the world, but if you have issues utilizing the food and nutrients and assimilating them, then it really doesn't fucking matter. So even if you're just a performance-oriented or aesthetic-oriented person, gut health should be very, very important to you. I mean, you're not going to look the way the best you could possibly look if your gut isn't functionally, optimally. And one of the first things that I personally notice with myself and with clients that I've worked with in terms of aesthetics is how quickly their aesthetics change when their gut is healed. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I know for myself, I'll see my strength go down when I have gut issues and go right back up when I don't. It's a very, very quick transition. So even if you're thinking to yourself, like, I don't care about, you know, who gives a crap about that? I'm just going to lift weights to build and get lean or whatever. No, this is something you should pay attention to because it's part of nutrition. However important you know nutrition is, this is part of it. So really, really pay attention to it. But it was mind blowing to me because so much of the things that we considered staples of proper nutrition and training, so many of those things actually did the opposite of what they were supposed to do and pushed us further and further away from this optimal health. And this is just
Why you always have to reevaluate common knowledge. And that just kind of brings one of those back to light. Like, are we doing this correctly? Is this really effective in those certain circumstances? And, those examples, it's showing that it's detrimental. It's not even like helping aid, your performance.
Well, the best advice always will be no advice will ever be better than this. Is learn how to listen to your body and then listen to your body. Even the advice that we give, as confident as we are in our advice, if we say something and you do it and you're like, man, this doesn't feel good, don't do it. Because I used to do that. I used to fall into that trap. When I would work out as a kid, I would do something or I'd eat a certain way and it wouldn't feel good, but I'd force myself because... Right. So-and-so bodybuilder said so, or this other trainer said so.
You thought that was part of the process. Like, I have to just punish myself to get to that level.
Just listen to your body. If you don't feel good doing it, if this exercise hurts you in a bad way, or if this particular training modality is setting you going, you're going backwards in performance, or if we say eat like this and then you eat like that and I've got indigestion or I don't feel good, stop and evaluate and listen to your body. Your body's pretty effective machine in terms of telling you, kind of directing you where you need to go. We just ignore it.
All this talk too about shakes makes me think about something that I've been meaning to tell you guys about too, and I've mentioned it a few times on the show, and now that I've been tracking consistently again for some time now, I grossly undereat protein. On a very consistent—
That's a tough one for you.
It is, and I feel like I have to say that on the show because we talk so much the other direction, because we know that the industry pumps that, 2 grams, 3 grams of protein, and all these supplement companies are pushing the bars and shakes. So trying to convince you, you got to eat that much. But, when you look at, when you break down mathematically what I have to accomplish every day in terms of the amount of protein I need to take, the amount of calories that I need to consume to build my physique, I undereat. And I have been consistently taking a shake almost every day. And of course, I'm always targeting whole foods, and that's what my ideal way to get it. But I've had to incorporate a shake every single day.
Yeah, and there's literally nothing wrong with that at all. I recommend shakes to people sometimes for that, when I coach them for that particular reason. The type of shake you use makes a big difference too. I don't think you choose the same ones you used to. I know you don't, because I know the shakes that you've
been. For some time now we were courting like three, and I hadn't said anything about it because I was waiting for a company that we liked and that not only liked the taste, reputable brand, liked the owners. A bunch of people had been sending me a bunch of stuff to try out, and some of it was okay, some of it I didn't like at all, but I love Organifi. So I've been drinking that shake.
That's actually one of the few protein shakes I can tolerate that don't bother me. In fact, there's a few companies. There's that one. Warrior Protein is another one, and some other one that I can tolerate. But Organifi,
Organic Muscle, maybe.
But Organifi is one of my favorite ones. I know they sent us a bunch of samples and we tested them out. But yeah, it's really just, again, listen to your body and know. What you're doing to yourself, and if you have gut issues, make that one of your priorities, because it will make a tremendous impact on your aesthetics and how your body adapts and performs.
Today's Quaw is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Quaw. All right, first question is from It's Chris Stacks. What do you guys think of anti-glycolytic training?
This is an example of when we take a little bit of science and a little bit of information and we try and overcomplicate it to make something sound really fucking cool and new.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what this is, right?
Yes, I do. I had to look it up to make sure I understood what
anti-glycolytic training.
Yeah. Our body has the three main sources of energy, right? That it's using. And the glycolytic is one of them, right? And what happens is you take something like that, right? So we understand that one of the energy cycles that the body goes through is the glycogen, right? So that's your ATP, ADP storage it's using, and then the lactic acid, right? And then, so it's the whole Krebs cycle, right, concept. Mm-hmm. And the idea of trying to play with that where you keep your heart rate at a certain rate to make sure that you don't tap into that is the best way for you to maximize. This is where I get frustrated with the fitness industry, and we try and overcomplicate something that is like, you're talking about the smallest details there, and there's benefits to it. There's science to support what the benefits, but there's also drawbacks of it also, because if you're an athlete who needs to hit their, because the idea is that you'd never get into cardio, right? You never hit your cardio threshold.
Right.
And they're saying that the benefits of it from the amount of muscle that you retain and keep plus the max amount of fat that you burn is awesome. And you get these benefits. And it's like these short bouts of sprinting, then letting off sprinting, kind of similar to what we've seen with HIIT or Tabata.
So they're trying to keep it all sort of fast twitch and not really express the endurance side of it.
What's his name? Who's the guy, the kettlebell guy?
Pavel?
Yeah, Pavel talks about this, and a few other coaches talk about this. At the end of the day, basically, it's don't train too intensely. That's really what it is.
For too long.
It's about not going to failure. It's about, because once you go to failure, once you hammer yourself to a certain intensity, you get into the stage of glycolytic energy sources, and they're saying you want to stay out of that, and that's the reason why, because you get better results, which we agree with. We always advocate people don't go to failure most of the time and modify their intensity and really pay attention to it, because we know as trainers, we've trained lots of people, and we know that pushing that intensity all the time results in worse results than if you don't do that, if you leave a couple reps in the tank. CrossFit did a study, a couple coaches that are very tightly knit with CrossFit, and I can't remember their names, did a study on this where they trained people typical WOD fashion, and then they took these other people over here and they trained them where they would stop them short of the super high intense, you know, stage.
Mm-hmm.
And who do you think progressed better and faster, right? The ones that didn't.
They actually did a study?
They did. The ones that didn't go super, super crazy hard.
Wow.
Olympic lifters are
surprised that came out.
Yeah, Olympic lifters are the ones you want to look at with this as well. Olympic lifters are excellent at this. They do these long training sessions where they're, you know, perfecting their form and perfecting their explosive power, but they're not training, you know, to extreme fatigue or past fatigue very often at all. And lots of money and lots of science has gone into Olympic lifting, by the way, more so than almost any other
strength sport. This is why when I recommend cardio for a competitor who's competing, getting ready for a stage, one, they don't do hardly any cardio whatsoever. When they finally start to do cardio with me, they're only doing these short 12, 15-minute bouts. That's it, where they're going and then laying off, going and laying off, going and laying off. And the very last thing that I would even consider doing is doing these longer bouts of cardio. The drawback, though, is if you're an athlete, right? There's carryover for somebody who is a basketball player, a CrossFitter, or whatever, by pushing beyond those limits. So for overall training, building muscle, burning fat, staying anti-glycolytic training is what's ideal, and we advocate that. But there's also something to be said about the sport or something that you could potentially be training for and the benefits of actually mirroring that.
And a lot of it's really the mental aspect. I mean, if you're in a competition where you're going to be tested to your absolute limit, it probably makes sense. I mean, of course, you want to go into that event being your most fit, right?
Yeah, conditioned.
But you also want to have the mental fortitude to know what it's like and to deal with that extreme intensity, you know what I mean? Because you could have all the fitness in the world. Boxers call it heart, right? You could have all the conditioning in the world, but if you get pushed to that limit and you can't operate there because you've never been tested and pushed yourself to that point,
yeah,
then you're gonna get your ass kicked.
Well, it's interesting. I'm like, you bring up the fact that Olympic lifting, like that, honestly has had the only science that has really dived into like actual like long periods of training, and they've had like, you know, testing the entire way through with that, and like, you know, the results are tangible because now you're applying these lifts and you know, you can track and trace whether or not, you know, their performance gains went up or down. And, you know, like, I think the biggest problem for me with like just kind of speaking to your general average person is that there really aren't like there wasn't any of that money that's gone into that type of rigorous,
right,
scientific, you know, in a lab setting, like testing your average individual person. So it's like,
that's a fucking great point, Justin.
There's no strength sport that has this much science behind, as much science behind the training as Olympic lifting. People, so here's one of the I hate to say positives, but one of the cool things that have come out of places like the Soviet Union and communist China is that they dump a shit ton of money on Olympic sports because it's a source of national pride.
That's why they whooped the shit out of us for like 7 years straight.
Well, it's a source of national pride, but then also because it's a communist regime, they own you. Like, they literally own you and they control you. So what they would do is they'd take these athletes away from their homes. So here you are. They've now, you know, they've gone to villages and they've searched for, you know, who they think are going to be great strength athletes, whatever. They take these 14-year-old kids or these, you know, 17-year-old kids. You know, it's a source of national pride. Hey, mom. Hey, dad. We're going to take your kid and they're going to live with us for the next 10 years because we're going to train them to be a champion. And mom and dad are like, thank you. That's great. Plus, we're poor, so
yeah,
we can't afford it. They take the kid. The kid lives in the training center,
eats, sleeps, breathes,
what they're fed, trains the way they're being trained. Like, in science, the more factors you can control, the better, or more the better you can predict, or the outcome is more accurate, I should say. And that's what they did with a lot of these people. And I guarantee we haven't seen all the studies. I'm pretty sure some of them are, they don't want anybody to see because they're probably pretty scary. But a lot of the studies are on strength. And they kicked the shit out of us. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, a lot of their coaches came to the U.S. and then we started catching on. But they did not train to extreme fatigue. That was one of the things they did. There was lots of volume, lots of frequency.
Lots of volume, yeah. And they made sure that like it was based off of the skill and the sessions, like, and they wouldn't go to that, you know, extreme fatigue, that max exertion. They saved that from when they would compete. And, you know, there's something to be said there, you know, when we're talking about this kind of stuff. It's like, you know, there's a process in a way, like if the best of the best in the entire world are doing it this way, why are we like even discussing this?
Yeah.
Well, this is where it gets tough for us because we always try and simplify it. The way we simplify a deeper question like this is by telling people what we say all the time, which is, you know, we tell you that you should probably leave two in the tank, that, you know, you should not be training to failure in your sessions, that intensity is a tool and it should be used rarely. It should be used intermittently into your routines, not all the time. Beast mode, no days off is silly. You're going to get the most benefits if you actually make sure you take care of the body. You're not hammering the fuck out of the body all the time. But when you see something like this where they take studies around athletes that are at this level where all these things are controlled, there's not a lot of carryover for that for the average person. So that's why I don't even like talking in depth with something like this, because it's like, well, you know, who's the avatar? Who are we talking about right now? Are we talking about a basketball player? Are we talking about the lady who needs to lose 60 pounds who's never worked out right now? Are we talking about just the average kid who's going to college and, you know, he's a weekend warrior in the gym and he just wants to be buff? Like, who are we talking to and how much does this really apply to them?
That's a good point, because there is some benefit besides the mental component, which we talked about earlier, to muscle hypertrophy for occasionally using extreme intensity, and it's because of the metabolic stress that it places on the body. So when you look at strength athletes, and I'll place bodybuilders in there, you know, so yeah, weightlifters, powerlifters, you know, all the, you know, Highland Games, strongmen, bodybuilders, and so on, the athletes that tend to advocate for failure and metabolic stress more than the others is bodybuilders. And that is because metabolic stress does stimulate muscle growth as well. So bodybuilders have learned to use that along with it. The problem is most pro bodybuilders, the best bodybuilders in the world, are such genetic freaks in the you know department of recovery, and are so synthetically supported with their hormones that they can go to failure much, much more often than the average person and not necessarily suffer the negative consequences. But for most people, you're going to get way better results long-term and short-term if you avoid going to failure and stop about one or two reps short of it.
The point is this, that this is, you know, taking three, something that we've known for a very long time, the different energy cycles and how the body uses it, putting a spin on it, throwing anti in front of it, calling it a training program. Yeah. It's like there's nothing revolutionary really about this information.
They just remarketed it.
Yeah,
in
it's
a different
just
way.
Right. It sounds super scientific because you throw glycolytic in there, and then you throw anti-glycolytic, and then throw training pro, and then you throw training program after, and it's like, oh shit, you know, this is part of this is tapping into that gimmicky side that I don't like. Not to say that it doesn't hold water and it doesn't have some truth to it. It does, but this is the typical fitness industry where we take a little bit of good science and information out there, you know, we throw a little spin on it and we package it and we sell it to the masses because it sounds fucking really cool. It sounds like it's revolutionary and new, but it's really not. It's just something else repackaged and shipped to you. It's a little bit of good information. Take it for what it's worth. Learn how to apply you know, it to yourself and understand that it's not exactly true for all cases.
Quick commercial break. Hey, people ask us all the time how they can support Mind Pump. Here's what you can do. You can go to www.brain.fm/mindpump and get 20% off Brain FM for meditation or focus. You can also go to audibletrial.com/mindpump and get a 30-day trial plus one free audio book. Lastly, you can go to getnatureblend.com/mindpump and you will get a discount on Ben Greenfield's CBD product.
Next question is from Joe Begadonuts.
Joe Begadonuts.
He's been asking good showing
questions.
Up.
He's got good questions lately.
Yeah, yeah. Have you heard or seen T Nation's article on building workouts based on your neurological profile?
We're just going to head down this direction. keep heading this way.
I know. Yeah. So,
this one sounds smart,
on
too.
On that note.
Yeah.
So, T Nation is one of the few publications. I don't know. Can you call them publications anymore? It's all on the internet now.
Yeah.
That I actually really enjoy many of their articles.
I do like their articles.
They're typically on the cutting edge with their information. And you know what's crazy? I feel like we're on the same wavelength many times. You know how many times I've gotten articles sent to me from T Nation that like they just posted today, and we like dropped an episode like the week before talking about that exact same topic.
It is interesting.
Yeah, no, I don't think that they're copying
spying
us.
On us?
Dang. I don't think they're copying
they're
us.
They're in our forum.
I just think that
they probably think we're copying them.
Maybe.
That's probably what it is. Huh?
I just, and I know some of the authors that write for them, I just think that we're on the same like path of trying to figure out what's right.
Right. They're searching for these new, you know, methods and like, you know, questioning a lot of like
anti-dogma.
When you think about it, it's really not, and I know we've speculated on this before, it's actually really not that weird. Because it is one of the few publications or whatever you want to call it that we all still read because they are on the newest stuff. They tend to respond to the bullshit.
They challenge things.
They challenge.
Which is great.
You know, so they're probably reading a lot of the same studies that we're reading and they're presenting some of the information the best they can, like ourselves. And so I
now
think
that being said, I am blocked from commenting on their Facebook.
Well,
I swear to God. So I don't know what I did to get blocked.
They flagged you as a problem.
I think what I did was I must have debated someone and then referred them to Maps or something, you know, that might be like competitive.
You became spam.
Maybe because, I don't know, but somebody was saying something about and I disagreed with the article. Or
are you poaching people?
I like that. I'm just being, you know, I'm just.
Yeah, it's funny. We got all this figured out in Maps.
Yeah, so so they blocked me from commenting. But anyway, so neurological profile is trying to figure out how your central nervous system operates, what state it's in, and then design or tailor a workout around your body. Now, here's the issue I have with this is
The individual variance here.
That's what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to individualize it so you can figure out for yourself. The problem with this is you would need to take a profile test right before every workout because that's how often
it changes.
That's
like
how quickly
crazy.
That's how quickly it could change. I could literally be in this incredible state neurologically. Like CNS is fresh and strong and you know, I'm ready to go have this crazy hard workout, and I could literally almost get hit by a car crossing the street, and now it's completely different. So it can change very dramatic. It could change by sleep, what I ate, the thought that I just had. I just ran into someone in the gym who's hot or annoying or whatever. So that's the problem I have with basing something on a neurological profile, is that your profile changes so
dynamically. It's the same thing when, you know, this other trainer was trying to get me into like lactate threshold and all these different like really high performance tests where they do like CO2 max and all these types of things. And it's like, yeah, but that changes all the time. You know, like it is as cool as it is to like show where your current state is with that right now. There's so many other factors, like if they're coming in, that, you know, the results are going to get skewed.
Well, this is what we talked about with HRV too. Yeah. That's the other. I mean,
I do want to get somebody on that can further explain the science.
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, in my opinion, all of those kind of fall in the same category. I think it's all very cool.
Yeah.
I think we're heading in the right direction. Yeah. I think it's
ultra specific.
Right. I think it will evolve. I think it will get better. I think we'll know more about it, and I think we will refine the science in it. I think where it's at right now, it's tough to dwell on it too much and make it a priority.
This would be a game changer. It would be an absolute game changer if it was real time. Like if I had something I could wear, and while I'm working out, it's telling me my neurological condition and how intense my workout should be. And
because you'll see, you know about that technology a little bit. It's interesting because you know them sort of prodding and stimulating certain parts of your brain to kind of pattern these movements and all that kind of stuff. Like that's interesting to me. But yeah, maybe there will be some kind of device like that will be that sophisticated.
This reminds me of like when people go, there's these companies right now that are doing these microbiome tests. So you send them your poop, and then they give you an analysis of your microbiome. But here's the problem with that, because I brought this up to Dr. Ruscio, and he made an excellent point. He's like, yeah, that's a snapshot of your gut at that moment. Literally, you could eat something, change your diet, whatever. And we know this. I could go from a keto diet to a diet of carbs. My microbiome will change. I could have a stressful day. My microbiome will change. And my poop is showing you what I'm pooping out, but not what's in my gut. A more accurate, you know, again, what we would want is something that's in my gut that can give me real time and tell me what's happening at this moment.
This is where nanotechnology comes in.
Yeah. So all this information is great. It's just, it's not useful yet because we don't have real-time results.
It's now, like after the fact.
Now, this all goes back to the good old-fashioned listen to your body, because when you can become in tune with your body and your body's signals and really, and what I mean by really listen is stop ignoring. Like if you know how many times I've ignored my body? I'm going into a workout and I mentally am like, I'm going to fucking beat myself up. I'm going to go so hard. Mm-hmm. But I know the signals my body are telling me is like, nah, dude, you need to go easy. But I ignore it. You know what I mean? I got that attitude like, fuck it, I'm just going to push myself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I still do that all the time. And you have to become very sensitive to the signals and really pay attention to them. There's nothing yet that's better than that. Now, when we have like real-time devices that you can read and see what's happening at that particular moment, man, that's going to be a game changer, because then you have objective black and white information right in front of you that you can't argue with, and you'll be able to look at and like the
dude, we're in the Silicon Valley. Somebody's working on that right now.
Oh, dude, it's like those insulin readers that people are getting, those real time
continuous glucometers.
There you go, continuous glucometers. Like all the tests they're doing on that
This is going to change the whole landscape. I'm so excited for that kind of technology to come out, and
it's here.
Yeah,
it's only a matter of time. Yeah,
but before
it be convenient, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's going to be there. Yeah,
those continuous glucometers have taken the.
Have you spoke to Euron lately? When was the last time you talked to him?
Not in the last month or so, but maybe like a month ago I spoke with him.
Well, with Josh.
I told him? Yeah, because there's you know certain companies that are actually building this into wearables and certain things. And
in the next 5 years.
He's going to explode. His company's going to blow up.
You should invite him back down for when Josh Trent comes in here on Monday.
That is a great call. I'm doing that.
This is in the next five years, you're going to see this everywhere, where you're going to be able to measure your glucose response to your food in real time. And by the way, the studies that they're doing on these continual glucose monitors is taking the glycemic index that we normally read and crumpling it up and throwing it in the garbage.
Yeah. Means, taking a shit on it.
Means nothing.
Nothing
literally
anymore.
Means nothing because you have two people that can eat a cookie.
Well, you saying, try this diet, that means jack shit anymore.
It means nothing because it's so individual. Like, these studies are showing that one person can eat a cookie and get a better glucose response than this guy over here who ate a fucking almond.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Now, like, what?
What the hell's going on here? So
it's exciting, dude.
Yeah. So, and you know, it's all goes back again. Listen to your body. That will be your best guide in terms of how intense your workout should be or what they should look
like. That being said, it's exciting to see the direction that we're going.
Super exciting.
Look forward to it, man.
Spam rice and eggs.
What? Gross.
Yeah.
Gross. That's good, man.
You like that?
Come on, dude.
Wrapped in seaweed?
Dude, that's Hawaiian
I know
fast
it is.
Food.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to have that when I go to Hawaii next month.
Nice.
Sorry, go ahead, Dan.
All right. Spam rice and eggs question is, what physical body adaptation will you get from steel mace and club training?
Oh, good question.
Well, I like this.
You know, just looking at Justin, he does it all the time. I can see that it...
become a superhero.
I think it develops a large brow ridge. And let's see.
Big calves.
Big calves and a thick neck. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
That's
go ahead,
testosterone,
Justin.
This is your,
and a poor complexion.
Yeah, it's testosterone. No.
This is your,
yeah. Poor complexion. And big kicks.
Yeah, this is your wheelhouse, brother. Yeah.
No, this is great. Like, I honestly, I love the fact that how I've used clubs and how essential they are now in you know, my routine and my off days, especially from hitting a really hard session, doing upper body or shoulder work, just to maintain health and function and communication, all these like little muscles within, you know, the shoulder girdle, and just to get everything to respond and be active and communicate properly. The clubs and, you know, and the mace bell are an enormous benefit for me for that. So just to get rotational strength and express movement that we are capable of doing. You know, it's great to just kind of like do arm circles and kind of warm up and do your thing, but to then train to get stronger in that movement is entirely different process. And, you know, you really can build strength in that rotational movement. And it's interesting to see how that bleeds into now pressing and pulling movements.
If you had to give it like a short term or name, right? Like, so we talk about hypertrophy or strength building or like that, would you say it's like rotational strength? Is that what you would say?
Yeah,
like,
just to simplify it, like really, you can build upon that and get stronger in, you know, rotational movements, which, you know, for athletes, like, let's just talk about that, how beneficial that would be. Most sports you're going to do, it requires your shoulder to go through like all kinds of different.
Almost everyone I can think of right now. I'm trying to run through all the sports right now. And what athlete would not need that, or would that not be conducive?
Right. Swimming, golfing,
professional gamers. Yeah. You know what I noticed from the steel mace? Incredible core activation, especially when you go heavy.
Too. Yeah.
Because you're fighting momentum. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain amount of momentum you want to use with the mace, but there's also, you have to control that momentum or you will hurt yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels like your spine will snap if you're not careful with a heavy weight. And so you're having to brace your core and coordinate your core with your movement, which you can work your core directly to strengthen the muscles and build the muscles for aesthetics. But then you can also work your core in conjunction with movement and momentum, which is more likely how you're going to need your core to function in real life.
Well, it's decelerating the force, so that, you know, this applies a lot to sports and life issues where it's like, you know, you get certain forces that are coming at you. How do you stabilize properly? How do you adjust and control your body within like all these variables that are coming at you? And so this is one of those ways where it's like, yeah, you're swinging something super heavy and, you know, I'm creating and generating this force in my core to, you know, sort of get that pendulum effect. But I'm also decelerating that force. So I'm creating it and I'm decelerating at the same time.
Which to me, I think CNS and the benefits of that in comparison to like isolation training or hypertrophy training where, mm-hmm. you know, I can get the benefits of hypertrophy sitting in a isolated position, getting a pump which helps me build muscle. But the overall central nervous system that I'm getting from that, because I'm not having to control it with all these other muscles, like Sal was saying, including your core, your entire body, you have to be grounded. Like, there's a lot more going on and a lot more benefits than just that.
And it's just way more dynamic. You know, like, how many exercises do you do that are that dynamic? Like, where the movement is so fluid and you know, everything else is just so static, you know, in my opinion. And like, that just doesn't represent a lot of what I would do outside of just training with weights. So there's a lot of carryover to it. So that's another big appeal
you
for me.
You can't get away with bad form either. The way you can get away, like, somebody can do a bicep curl, like 10 different people can do a bicep curl, all with different mechanical issues, right? That are that have poor recruitment patterns, and it be performed okay, and they get a bicep pump and they exercise and they have no idea anything's wrong. If you cannot do a mace bell swing, I mean, you'll know right away.
Right. Yeah.
you'll know right away. It definitely points out your imbalances or poor recruitment patterns.
It's a good point, because honestly, don't even do it if you don't have good shoulder mobility yet.
Right.
You know, that's something that it's like, you got to put the work in. It's almost at the higher end level of like a skill exercise that you can even attempt. You have to put all the prerequisites have to stack up before we even get to that point where we work on this even further. So,
well, have you ever seen like a, you guys ever seen like a really big buff?
Well, like, I was just gonna say, have you ever seen Juju and Craig Caperso swing those things?
Yeah, it's scary. They muscle it.
Yeah, it's scary.
Well, because
it's
scary. Well, they just don't understand it either.
That's, you know? You have to train it. But it reminds me of like when you see like a really big buff dude throw a punch,
yeah,
and they're muscling it, or throw a baseball, or, you know, when I used to grapple, you'd see these really strong dudes try and grapple, and they're muscling everything because they're over applying strength when they don't need to, and they're under applying it when they're supposed to apply more, and there's no good coordination with their movement. Maces and club training is very good at teaching you when to apply strength, when to reduce your strength, and when to connect all that together. And I could see the benefit of doing the clubs or the steel mace before your workout, after your workout, and even potentially in between your sets to translate what you just did with your workout better.
Well, this is a good topic for me, and this is kind of like, I've tried to figure out how to articulate all this stuff, because it is a little bit outside of like a lot of people's thought process of like how to work out, you know, and like where does this fit in? And, you know, you're talking about those specific points, and Adam brought up the CNS training, and, you know, there's ways to, you know, you need to train the body to be able to produce like this force and this a really high like amplification, a magnitude of force when you need it then. But then you also have to be able to control that force. And then you also have to be able to control, you know, your composure and bring that and decelerate that force. So, I mean, it's complicated because, and this is where we get into like Olympic lifts, right? So, for me to be able to generate enough force to be able to boom, explode, and drive through, and get those ground forces, to drive the weight up and to get enough lift from it, and then be loose, relax. At the same time. So that just happened. Boom. That was like a split second that I applied the force that I needed. Now I have to relax my body, and now I have to tense my body in a way that I'm controlled and I have good composure, and then I'm getting underneath it and then driving through the end of it. So it's like, it's such a complicated process. You know, it's a skill that a lot of times it's way outside of people's understanding that just want to like work out and lift weights and you know, build muscle.
It's fun.
It's crazy to me that it's not a staple thing in most athletes' regimen, because I feel like there is where it's huge. I mean, I wish I would have known about the clubs and the mace back when I was a kid playing sports, because the carryover for an athlete is huge. I mean, it's great for an average person, no doubt. That's why we're fans of it. We talk about it. We use them. And we totally advocate others to try them and see if they can actually perform the movement. And if not, fix your imbalances to get to the point where you can control it. But man, for an athlete, to me, I feel like it's a no-brainer
yeah.
well, that these types of tools should be used in your regimen somewhere.
Well, look, I've been in gyms for over 20 years, okay? Longer, actually. That's professionally, but I've been in gyms longer than that just because I worked out as a kid. And I've seen machines come and go and change at least four different times. Major changes in the way machines look at least four times in that entire period of time. The one thing that has never changed in gyms are dumbbells and barbells because they stand the test of time. Kettlebells, steel maces, clubs are older than dumbbells and barbells, and they're still around. Like these things have been used by athletes and grapplers and wrestlers in the military in isn't other it, countries is, for a
it,
long time.
Isn't it funny mm-hmm. how hard it is for us as humans to like look outside our own scope? Like I'm 35 years old, so to me, anything that's 35 years old is ancient. Right, if it's 35 year old, it's ancient to me because yeah. it's been around for as long as I've been around, so it's old. Mm-hmm. But and you think about all these cool selectorizer machines and hammer strengths and the latest machine to do this, and that's such a great point to bring that up. These fucking tools, hundreds and hundreds, thousands of years. Some of them.
Yeah. I mean, a mace training was around in the medieval times.
Yeah,
right.
That's what they used in war and whatever
military training.
And then people kept it after. Nobody used a mace in war anymore.
Right.
But they still kept it because they noticed benefit to their performance in sports and on the field and in wrestling and all these different things. They stand the test of time for a reason. Bodyweight exercise stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
For a reason. So if you're listening right now and you're thinking like, all these exotic tools, you know, I'm not going to get any benefit from them. Try it. Get
this
good
is,
at them and it'll
this
blow
is
your
not
mind.
An exotic tool. An exotic tool to me is a shake weight, a thigh master thing, yeah. The newest gimmick gizmo tool that will come and go. It'll yeah. sell a million, make somebody rich. Nobody will talk about it in 5 years. This is not that. This is something that was before. This is what all those gimmicky tools they based it off of.
Yeah.
What the carryover, the things
they
that
try
you
try to oversimplify it.
Right.
Because it's a complex set of skills that, you know, it's your proprioception, your body awareness, like all these factors and your mobility, all these things play a factor in, you know, how effective you are at performing this skill. Mm-hmm. And so it takes work, man. It takes work to sharpen up the skill. You can start wherever you are. There's ways to start where you can just, you start just by holding it behind your head and you just start a nice little pendulum rock. And, you know, you get your body accustomed to it. And, you go through the process of like one by one, step by step. There's, you know, a way to sort of inch your way to get to, you know, a really good looking swing.
There's a lot of wisdom.
Be cool to put a YouTube series together on how to get to a good kettlebell, I mean, a good mace bell swing, yep. because there is a lot of little parts.
Yeah, I've had a bunch of people actually asking when we're going to do a series like that.
Let's
so
do it. There's a lot of wisdom in ancient, standing the test of time modalities, especially when it comes to exercise and training. So when you see these cultures, you know, who've been doing these things for, you know, hundreds of years or a thousand years, like pay attention. The reason why they've been doing it so long is because they have a tremendous benefit. And I mean, this goes for everything. You know, martial arts is great too. You look at martial arts and you look at some of these old styles and you're like, well, why are they kicking like that? That's not very effective on the street. And it's like, well, it was back then when they were fighting on boats. That's why they stood so low and they kicked the way they did. Or they had shoes on with seashells on the side and they used them to cut people. And that's why they do the knife ridge kick or whatever. Like, pay attention to this ancient wisdom and put it in context. And these methodologies, the mace and the club, were used by, I know in India and in the Middle East, clubs were used by wrestlers. And mace were used by wrestlers. So lots of carryover for grappling for sure.
Quick commercial break, you guys. We keep getting asked all the time, how can I support the Mind Pump family? Here's one of the best ways you guys can. You guys love that Chimera coffee that we have. Chimera coffee with a K. You go to chimeracoffee.com, put in the discount code MINDPUMP for 10% at the checkout. Also, if you guys want to know how I have this luxurious beard and you want one too, go to BigTopBeardCompany.com, put in the discount MINDPUMP again, but this time for 33% off. Also, you guys, if you guys have not tried Ben Greenfield's new bars out, they're fantastic. If you want some, go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com/NatureBite, put in the code MINDPUMP and get 10% off. Go check it out.
Next up is John Scoville. How much does your sleep
posture affect your imbalances and mobility?
Oh, a lot.
You know, I had to think about this for a little while.
Like side sleeping, back sleeping, all that.
Yeah, so it definitely affects mobility and imbalances because you're in a position and you may be in a certain position for a long period of time. So muscles will stretch based on that position for, you know, 5 hours, 6 hours, however long you're in that particular position. That could definitely affect your day-to-day. However,
have you guys ever had this? You just remind me of this. This just happened to me like 2 days ago. I was so tired. We had those days where we had guests back to back to back, and I'd been going from 5 a.m. I came home, like, seriously, in my shorts and shirt and everything that I wore that day, and I never sleep face down. I always sleep on my back. But I just plopped down, and my arms were underneath my chest, and I woke up in a pool of drool. And my arm, everything had gone to sleep, so I couldn't use my arm.
Move your arms.
I woke up scared to death, bro. I'm paralyzed. I wake up and I'm like,
I've done that before.
I'm smashed in the pool of drool, and our arms are asleep because I fell asleep on top of them. It was the scariest feeling I had.
I roll on the floor.
I roll to my side, and then I like sat up with my abs, right? Sat up, and then I'm like swinging my arms around to get the.
To get the blood flow again.
Oh God, I can move my fingers. Thank God, I'm not dead.
That happened when my arms were behind my head and I couldn't move them after that.
It scared the shit out of me.
Did you almost call like Katrina? Like,
oh, help, I was. I was freaked out. I was for a split moment. Right, it was only a split moment. Did I actually think that I was paralyzed? But it did for one moment. I go like, oh my God, what happened to me?
That's happened to me. Where I had to like lift one of my arms to move it because I'm afraid I'm gonna roll over on it and break it because I couldn't feel it. What I was going to say is your sleep posture does affect mobility and imbalances, but not nearly as much as your waking hours do, because although you may be laying in a position like the fetal position, or you always sleep on one side or whatever, although you may be staying in that position for long periods of time, you're not connecting to it because you're not activating muscles in there. So you're not really developing poor recruitment patterns. I actually had to think very, very deeply about this because I know it can affect you, but I was trying to think like how much can it affect you? And I'm like, well, when you're sleeping, if I'm sleeping in this one position, I'm not connecting to it like I'm walking this way or standing this way.
Right. So it's not nearly as bad as being in a like a tense position all day.
Yeah.
Like sitting at your desk is worse for you than the way you sleep.
Definitely.
Right.
Definitely. Now, that being said, if you wake up in pain or whatever, like let's examine examine how you sleep, examine the quality of your sleep, and then examine your movements throughout the day. Like I know some people have hip problems when they sleep on their side, so they'll have to put like a pillow between their knees. That's a kind of a Band-Aid solution. Mm-hmm. Also figure out why your hips are bothering you in the first place when it's a position you can
I'm
get
glad
into.
You said that, because to me, when I ask clients about how they sleep, I'm more interested in their habits, because typically when you lay in bed, you'll do certain things. Like you have the people who will slide one leg up on one side because their low back is tight on the opposite side, or they have to sleep on one side because of their shoulder on the other. So normally your sleep patterns, think of it more like this. So you have an imbalance, an issue going on, and how you sleep, that's because you get there because that's the only way you feel comfortable. So it's the imbalances that's causing you to sleep that way, opposed the way you're sleeping is causing those imbalances. Does that make sense?
Yep.
That is more common. So I like to ask clients how they're sleeping, so I can it then helps me assess where they probably have some imbalances, because they have these habits of sleeping with a pillow between their legs, kicking one leg up on one side, sleeping with their shoulder up on one side and on the same side.
They usually
always
do that because they can't sleep the other way.
Because the other way makes it tight and uncomfortable.
Right.
And so it's less of the sleep is affecting the imbalances of mobility. It's that you have imbalances and you have issues, and so you sleep a certain way because that's the only way you feel comfortable.
Now, I will say this. If you were to prioritize all of the factors that will influence your overall health and wellness and fitness and all that.
I knew you were going to go here.
if you were to rank them, people would typically rank nutrition or exercise 1 and 2, and then sleep is somewhere maybe 3rd, 4th, 5th, or maybe down.
Yeah.
But the truth is, your sleep is actually the most important factor. It's even more important than your nutrition and exercise. And if you don't believe me, you know, you can go for a couple days without water you can go for a long time without food. But within 24 to 72 hours of complete sleep deprivation, you will likely experience psychosis. That's how big of an impact it has on your health. Not only that, but what we have to consider with sleep is humans are pretty exceptional at functioning at a moderate level.
That's a really good analogy that you just give. And I think that back up a little bit. That's when you think about that. If you 5 days, right? 5 days of no water, 5 days of no food, 5 days of no training, 5 days of no sleep. Which one of them fucks you up the most?
No sleep might even kill you. There were actually some Soviet.
When you think of it like that,
it's the go-to torture.
When you think of it like that, we really do oversimplify the importance of sleep.
I'll tell you what, the Soviet
including Union, myself, I'll be the first one to admit that I used to say, fucking sleep is overrated. Yeah. You're a pussy if you need
when you die.
Dude, yeah, you're a pussy if you need more than 2 hours of sleep.
I'm going to blow your mind right now. I don't know if I posted that. I might have posted this study that I just
read. You
did
on the forum.
I posted on the forum. Yeah. They did a study, 24-hour sleep deprivation. So they had people completely stay awake for 24 hours. All of them exhibited symptoms of schizophrenia. Okay, here's the problem with going crazy is you don't know. Everybody else does, but you don't know. So all the participants were like, every single one of them was like, I'm fine. I could totally operate normal.
He's fine. No, I'm fine.
Yeah.
He's fine. Everybody's fine.
They'll be like, well, I'm tired, but that's about it. And it's like the researchers are like, wow, they're exhibiting symptoms of schizophrenia.
I think you have to unpack that study a little bit, because then it's like, how is that any different than if we were to measure all the markers right after somebody did an intense workout?
Oh, no. These are behavioral.
Oh.
No, these are behavioral symptoms. Okay. I'm not talking about the brain.
Okay.
I'm talking about like the way that they're behaving.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay.
I thought you were looking at basic markers. Come on. That's not fair.
No. This is like...
Because it is a temporary stress, and we've actually even talked about we've speculated that maybe there is some benefits to occasionally depriving yourself of
a little bit.
Right.
A little bit. And you got to be very careful. It might be a good idea to not drink water for 5 or 6 hours, because there may be a benefit from... that kind of stress. Food, the benefit doesn't come from 4 or 5 hours. It comes from 24, 48 hours. It's all dependent on the stress. Sleep, we're very sensitive to. And again, like I was saying, humans do such a good job operating at moderate to low levels of sleep deprivation that we don't even realize what's going on. Not only that, but modern life is all about managing sleep deprivation. If you think about it, coffee in the morning to wake me up, some kind of a depressant at night to make me think I'm falling asleep. I got shitty sleep now. Even though I'm in bed for 8 or 9 hours, the sleep quality is poor. I'm on electronic, where it's literally artificial daytime whenever I want. So my circadian rhythm's totally off because I'm not experiencing darkness. We go from bright lights to pitch black to go to sleep. Your body can't change that quickly. Sleep quality is horrible in people. And here's the other thing. Sleep has been directly connected to behaviors that are related to the food choices that we make and our activity level. So if you're going on all these diets and you're like, man, I can't. I have such a tough time trying to eat right. It's so hard. This is everybody. I have such a tough time eating right. And I have all these crazy cravings. And, I've gotten lean before, but then I go off the wagon and whatever. Like, fix your sleep. And it will make a huge impact on how the ease at which you eat properly. It makes that big of a difference. I really dive deep into this and have done some more research on this. And it's like, it's mind-blowing to see how big of an impact this has on all of those things. Activity levels, your mood, the way you think, your hormones. Makes a huge impact on your hormones, testosterone. One of the best things you could do to raise your testosterone levels as a man is increase the amount of sleep you have and improve the quality of your sleep. So one thing that I advocate now to all of my online coaching clients is a sleep routine. And it's made a huge difference for them. It's made a huge difference for me. And part of that routine includes 1 hour before going to bed, shut off all electronics and only use candlelight. So for 1 hour, you're exposed to just candlelight. Even better would be to match the sun. So if the sun goes down, do this, but that's not really realistic for a lot of people. You don't want to be in candlelight from 8 p.m. till whatever time you go to bed. But do that for at least an hour. Drink something warm, you know, right around that time, warm tea, warm water, whatever. Do some either meditative stuff or stretch or things that bring the body down. Whatever's stressing you out or you're anxious about, write it down so that you can write it down and forget it. So you can say, okay, this is what I'm stressing about. Mm. Fold that piece of paper up. I'm going to look at this sometime tomorrow. Forget it. Make sure your room is cool. Don't sleep with clothes on. That's actually been shown to help us sleep better. And make sure you don't have distractions in your room. Black out your room and go to sleep. After doing this for a couple weeks, you'll get, once your body gets acclimated,
a lot of that stuff, though, to me is the final progression to get to that. And something that's been a game changer for me, and I've said it a bunch of times on this show, is Brain FM, is using that as a tool to help me get to that state. Because it's really tough for a lot of us type A personalities that are go, 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 go every single day. We're hammering it away. And then all of a sudden I need, okay, Sal told me, you know, Coach Sal told me I need to improve on my sleep.
But your head's still spinning.
Yeah, but my head, you can't just turn that off. Like if you're a maniac,
sure,
like I am, like you just don't go from, you know, full throttle all day to all, okay, it's 10 o'clock at night, it's time to shut down. Like it takes a while for my brain to wind down. Nothing has helped me more than, and I do the by fire. I turn off the television. I've got the blue light blocker. I got all those things. Nothing helps me get to that state than throwing some Brain FM in my ears and listening to that for about a half hour and doing my box breathing.
Yeah.
If I box breathe and
I
listen,
could echo that. It's definitely the breathing, and you know, I started out with Brain FM, kind of helping me get into that place mentally, but also, you know, really peering into my caffeine consumption and like when to shut it off and make sure. Like I had to go even scale back to where like I don't drink anything past like 1 o'clock now because I was going, you know, too far to where it would carry into at night where I was still, you know, fighting that inner voice that was constantly, you know, going off in my head. And then, you know, one thing too, like, and I know like it's been cool just kind of picking Jessica's brain, Sal, she was talking about like walking super, super slow.
Oh, meditative walking.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, she taught me that.
I thought that was a great idea.
She taught me that. So meditative walking, it's great when it's your girlfriend because you can't make fun of her because you're like, oh, yeah. We'll get an argument about it, so I'm just going to try it. And it's fucking legit. Like, what you do is, and we've done this a few times at night because meditation is all about just putting you in, being present and making you the observer, right? That's all really what meditation is trying to do. You know, focusing on your breath is one technique where you're just constantly bringing yourself back to your breath because what that's doing is it's making you present. Well, slow walking is doing that where you're taking, literally, you're doing super slow motion, intricate steps, and you're like slowly hitting your heel on the floor and rolling forward on your foot and coming up on your toes and then slowly lifting the back foot and bringing it forward. And all you're doing is trying to go as slow as you can and just focus on your steps each time. And you do this for like 15 seconds. It's a very effective technique.
Yeah.
For making you present. It sounds really silly.
Well, it sounds silly, but you think about it and it like forces you to really be like present in that moment. And plus it's literally like almost like turning a knob on your brain to like, you know, operate like at that level and like start, you know, kind of winding down. And it just physically happens the more you focus on it.
Well, I find myself doing it and then my mind will want to think about something. And my steps will speed up. So I have to like hurry up and okay, I got to focus back on my. So it's really good technique because you're moving.
Yeah.
You know, while
it's
you're
tangible.
Doing it.
That's why I like
it. I haven't done it that super slow, but I was getting lots of benefits from when I told you guys I would walk the dogs barefoot every night. So I would just take shoes off and then just, I would pay attention to my feet gripping the ground.
Yeah, very,
you know,
similar.
So I would touch my feet and then I would grip it and then touch again and grip it. And then I know that I have an anterior pelvic tilt. So I would activate my glutes and kind of roll my pelvis under and I would be walking that way. So I'd be, my core is contracted. My pelvis is tilted forward. I'm like concentrating on how my feet are grabbing and gripping the floor. And I wasn't walking that slow, but just being that mindful of my deviation that I was trying to activate and correct while I walk kind of slow and touching the ground and gripping it with my toes would just bring me so present, dude.
Yeah, what you have to...
Sounds silly. I know it does.
It's crazy because the more we learn about this, the more our modern ailments start to make sense. Like I've talked about this once or twice, I think, on the podcast, where the most common complaint now in therapists and psychiatric offices and psychologists' offices now is anxiety. Anxiety, there's actually this huge epidemic where people are suffering from extreme anxiety, and benzos and SSRIs are being prescribed for them because people are experiencing these super anxious states. But if you think about it, it kind of makes sense, because we're in these moderate levels of stress all day long, mm-hmm. and then we don't experience the most recuperative thing that we do all day long, which is sleep. I mean, and the most anabolic thing. Let's also be accurate here. Nothing you do all day long is an anabolic sleep. Sleep is totally anabolic. That's what happens when you sleep.
Is it considered more anabolic than working out?
Working out is an anabolic. Well, working out, sending the signal.
Post workout.
Yeah, sleep is when shit really, really goes down.
Puts it together.
Sleep does a lot of things. While you're sleeping, your brain is pruning synapses it doesn't need. It's actually becoming more efficient at the thought process. It's solidifying memories, and there's a lot of other mysteries that we don't understand about sleep. But nonetheless, we're in this constant low level or moderate level of stress all the time, which means we have certain hormones that are being released, like cortisol, and our body stops responding to cortisol very well by downregulating receptors and whatnot. So what ends up happening is we crave things that cause a cortisol release, and that affects our diet as well. So besides caffeine, which kind of mimics cortisol, we're going to crave sugar. We're going to crave sweets. We're going to crave foods that cause a dopamine release, foods that are extremely palatable, like processed foods. So, not having good sleep and not having adequate sleep is going to ruin your diet. It'll make it very difficult for you to eat, because the signals that your body is sending you aren't based on necessarily on nutrition. They're based on survival at that particular moment. And that means you're going to make decisions that feel good in the short term, like, oh, I feel okay, I'm so tired, I feel so shitty, oh, that coffee made me feel better, or okay, that donut, I feel so good eating this donut. But in the long term, can cause this cascading, events that cause poor long term health. So, no joke, I'm not exaggerating here. If you focus on your sleep and make that a priority, you will find many of you will find that it becomes a lot easier to eat properly. So, and with that, go to mindpumpmedia.com and check out our 30 days of coaching. It's available for free. It's a plethora. It's a treasure trove of information.
A panacea
of information, absolutely for free.
It's a bunch of.
For anybody. You go on there and you register and you'll get all that.
A squeeze heart for that one.
Also, if you want to ask us a question that we answer in an episode like this one, the place to do it is on Instagram. The page to do it on is Mind Pump Media. You can also find our personal Instagram pages. Mine is Mind Pump Sal, Adam is Mind Pump Adam, and Justin is Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.